Hey there, friends. Jim Miller along with Chris Hull. We're here at the Pure Gravel World Headquarters of Domination doing a little wrap-up from the BWR Cedar City. The metaphorical and literal dust has settled. The truck is unpacked and we're all back and a little sore and a little dusty, but all full of smiles and love for everything that went on out there in Cedar City this past weekend. Chris, it was an amazing weekend, and I know that for our viewers that are watching this, we wear a lot of hats when we're at a BWR. We've got the Pure Gravel responsibilities.
Some would say too many hats.
We might be able to do some of the other things a little tighter if we didn't have so many hats on.
But we love it, and we do it because we love it.
Absolutely, and it gives us a unique purview into the event because we see it from both the inside out and the outside in. And then also too, which we'll get into here in a few minutes, our ability to cover this race was a really, really special treat. But maybe Chris, give us your general thoughts across the top of what the event was like and what you thought and saw from not only the expo perspective, but also the race itself.
Yeah, I just wanted to sit down with you and kind of go over all of the Utahsomeness that we saw. That's Michael's favorite new word this week, Utahsomeness.
I love it.
And because even though we get the chance to go and interview these people and be at the event and ride in the lead car, I still feel like you don't really get a sense of what it's like to be there.
Yeah.
And how cool it is. And so I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah. Seeing the race from the perspective that we did, which was driving the lead car, following whatever point the end of the men's race.
So much fun.
Yeah.
That is the most fun day of the year.
It's like having your own personal little bike race.
Yeah. And we leapfrogged the leaders at Unbound in a big pickup truck and, you know, have been on course on a lot of these races, but being in that side by side on that course is so much fun. It gives you you feel like you're riding with the riders. Except I couldn't keep up with them if I wasn't in a dune buggy.
Yeah.
And it was the best thing that I did all year.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing to see how fast they were going. The first thing I thought is, I can't believe how fast these guys are going. I couldn't keep up with these guys for a half a mile. I would explode and detonate. And they were just, like, for the first 2 hours, they were on the gas for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just drilling it.
Yeah.
At the point when we turned into onto Rond Road Heuvels, around the Red Hills at Little Salt Lake, last year there were about 200 riders in the lead pack. This year it was already whittled down to 50 because they were going so fast.
Yeah.
And that was my first kind of shocking moment was, I can't believe, when are they going to slow down?
Yeah.
And they didn't slow down.
Yeah.
They were going 30 miles an hour on that chip seal.
I know.
Yeah.
And then too, when they get into some of the technical sections, when clearly the riders had done their homework and they knew there's going to be a selective section and they just hit the gas, and you could see those things really start to stretch out and the elastic gets snapped from a lot of those guys.
Yeah. It's fun watching these races. They're starting to have this character of this race of attrition. That's fascinating to watch. These got these pack of 20 guys, and then they get into a position what's the one called with the 10 hills?
The rollers for rulers.
And you can just see it happening. The strong guys are twisting the throttle a little bit and surging up this really short hill. And they know that if one guy is under pressure and they can pop him off the back, they'll never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
And so they surge and then set in a little bit and then surge and look back and see who's still there. And just over and over again, and it's this race of attrition of who can hang on, because once you're gone, you're gone.
Yeah.
And so we watched this go from 50 to 30 to 20 to 15.
And not that we wanted anybody to fail or drop off, but we were kind of taking little bets in the car, who was going to be next, because you could literally see the physical body start to break down, and they say, this guy is about ready to pop, and then maybe sure enough, you just can't stay on the pace anymore.
Yeah, and we also have, one of the things that you don't see is that from the lead vehicle, we're also feeding and supporting the lead group. So unlike some of these other gravel races that have a self-supported kind of ethos, BWR, at least at the front, the whole race is well-supported. There's really nice aid stations and on-course mechanics, but at the front, the lead riders are taken care of as if it was a Paris-Roubaix or a road race. So we've got a mechanic vehicle following. We've got a lead vehicle that's able to give them gels, able to give them water when they need it, to try and take care of the riders physically and mechanically so that the strongest riders will win and not because there was a mechanical, or oh, I dropped a bottle and now I lost.
And luckily there were really only two mechanicals that I can think of that really affected the outcome of the race. We'll get to the second one in a second in a little bit here, but there's really only two that I remember. So luckily that wasn't needed that much. But yeah, we're also, in addition to being video coverage, commentary, we're also race director and lead support vehicle, if not only support vehicle, in between the aid stations.
Yeah, and where I was going with that is that sometimes you see a guy ask for a gel kind of too early, and you're like, oh, he's not going to make it.
Yeah. Or Adam Roberts, who chooses to douse himself in water every opportunity, it seemed like.
He is the most well-hydrated man in the peloton, for sure.
But that's his pro background. They just wave a bottle in the air, and the car comes up and services. But we did the best we could. We kept Adam really well-hydrated.
You know what? Props to him for getting a competitive advantage.
True.
Staying cool, because, you know, you're limited by heat as much as you are by fuel.
Yeah.
So the water is there, and he's going to use it.
Yep. It's fascinating to watch. It's fascinating to hear and see. You'll get barked at by Peter Stetna because the cars were appearing to chase and pace people back in. Turned out didn't need that because they just kept on riding away from whatever groups were reforming. You see the little bobbles and things like that that create these big separations, and that's always fascinating too, because all of a sudden sometimes we'd get distance quite significantly because there just wasn't a place to pass somebody on some of the double track. And then when you were able to, you'd look up in the distance and you'd see that, wow, these guys put 2 to 3 minutes on whatever chasers they had in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I felt so bad for that chase group. We got stuck behind a chase group that had fallen off the lead group on this double track, and there's these gentle rolling hills. And so we lose sight of the lead group for just not very long. And then when we get to the top of the hill and we see them again, and they're so much further away.
Yeah.
And then it happens again. We go down into a little valley and come back up, and they're way off into the distance. And then we do it again, and they are gone.
Yeah.
And it's got to be just so demoralizing and disheartening for these chase group who we can see are working so hard, working mm-hmm. well together, giving it everything they've got. And every time they get sort of a time check, they're losing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was exciting to see a couple of the people did chase in. Our group at one point was 9, then all of a sudden it was 11, and we were kind of looking around, scratching our heads, where'd they come from? But two guys had chased literally up through the climb to reattach themselves, and then went into one of the more trickier dirt sections right after that. So it speaks to the level of athlete that has this ability to go really hard and then recover and keep going along with these surges all throughout the race. We, you know, there were a couple of critical sections. I mentioned the one long dirt section, very challenging, where Griffin Easter and Pete Stetna just took to the front and really exploded the group. How it even reformed after that is still amazing, just to speak to the talent of the riders behind them. But when it did, it whittled down to a final group of 6.
Yeah, it was an amazing display by Griffin Easter. He drilled the front on the whole sector, what turned out to be really the decisive sector of the race. They went in with 13 or 14, and it was New Harmony.
Yeah.
And it was this sector that had little sand pits, really steep hills, little pitchy climbs that are only sometimes 50 feet long. But it was enough that if one guy took a bad line and dabbed, he was gone.
Yeah, and that's all it took.
At one point, two people collided and 4 guys gone.
Yep.
And the peloton knew it was happening. And so Griffin and Pete, but Griffin in the lead, just hammered it, so that these people would have no chance. If you make a mistake, you will not come back.
And to speak to that too, as good as they are at delivering the power and getting away from groups, it's the bike handling skills, I think, that stand out to me in some of these sections. How hard and how fast these guys can go on both uphill and the challenge section, but on the downhill as well. The way they can handle a bike, that probably more than anything can help create time and just distance. And every little point that the other guys are breaking and they're not, it's just more time that they're piling on. And that was on full display. Pete Stetna was a masterclass in how he was able to not only ride these really challenging sections, but also the descents to where he's able to put more time into the field.
There was more than one section where we had a hard time keeping up with him in our dune buggy on the descents, because we just could not bomb it as fast as he could.
In a dune buggy. We couldn't stay ahead of them in a dune buggy. That's how fast they were going.
Yeah. It was crazy.
It was a masterful display. And then really, again, that decisive mechanical was on the Tollweg sector. The long climb preceding that, Griffin Easter just sat right there on Peter Stetna. And in Peter's own words, Griffin was the strongest rider out there today. And who knows what would have happened had he had not flatted on that descent. A real bummer to the outcome of the race. But that is racing. That's what happens. We have to deal with that. he couldn't have been nicer and more humble in his approach. He was all smiles after the race. But it would have been really cool to see if that dynamic, how that dynamic would have played out over the last 9 miles after they came off the tollway.
Yeah, I would have liked to see them duke it out on that last dirt sector.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, that was skill, off-road skills.
Absolutely.
You know, Griffin made a mistake and Pete didn't. Yeah. You know, one friend of ours commented that, oh, I can't believe Griffin let Pete go into that first, because the guy second through a sector like that has such a disadvantage, because if you're chasing, you can't see all the rocks
right.
and the twists and turns as well. And so Pete, being in front, is able to twist the throttle find his line and take a few chances, but make Griffin behind him take even more chances.
Yeah.
And so that's the way it played out.
The rest of that podium, super talented. Paul Voss, former World Tour rider, wore the polka dot jersey at the Tour de France. We mentioned Adam Robert. Alexis Cartier was just as a bigger guy. Him and Brennan Wirtz out there all day working really, really hard with that group. And I think we've got a really talented group of podium placements there to be really, really proud of for the event on the men's side.
Yeah. My other note on our coverage is that one of the other things that you don't see is that we are in a vehicle with the creator of the Belgian Waffle Ride and race director, Michael Marks, and Jim. And when the camera's off, they are laughing like kids, talking about the race, just like being silly, even a little crazy. And then the mic comes on and everybody's cool. And I tried to get Michael to be loose Michael on camera and he wouldn't do it.
Well, don't forget too, we got Simon strapped to the back.
Yeah. Okay,
our photographer, lead photographer. It's literally carabinered into the back of things, sitting outside the rig, completely unsafe. Don't do that at home, kids. The whole ride, whether he's facing front or back, and he gets a special commendation because that was not an easy day for him.
If you go rewatch the coverage, you can see him every now and then when we turn the camera around. He's strapped onto the back of that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though we didn't cover it personally, our colleague Joy and Steve were able to drive the vehicle that covered the women's race, and a spectacular race broke out there as well. Whitney really dominated that field, put a good 6.5-7 minute lead on about 3/4 of the way, and was able to hold it. Whitney Allison coming in first and winning it. Lindsay Goldman ended up 7.5 minutes or so behind her. So a really, really impressive victory for Whitney. She's been knocking on the door all season, and we're glad to, you know, crown her as the champion of the women's race.
Yeah, the other stories that I was interested in was, of course, the Triple Crown.
Mm-hmm.
The Triple Crown, Brennan Wirtz came in with an 8-minute lead on Adam Roberge. And we told Adam that he had a chance and didn't really believe it.
Yep.
But you never know what's going to happen out there. Brennan was one of those guys that got caught up in a pileup in a sand pit in New Harmony. And fell off the back.
Yep.
And Adam stayed with the lead group all the way up until the you know final big climb up Kanar Mountain, and wound up winning the race by 20 minutes on Brennan.
Because he was able to stay with that lead group.
Because he was able to stay with that.
That little dab, that 30 seconds becomes a minute, becomes 2 minutes really, really quick.
Became 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I thought I was lying to Adam saying that, oh yeah, you got it. Good job, you know, you'll do it. And man, he crushed it by 20 minutes.
But I say this, we're going to be talking about those two guys for a long time to come.
Yeah.
Brennan is an up-and-coming superstar in the sport. Adam Robert is as strong as a rider is out there, and we're going to be talking about them for a long time to come,
Both strong riders.
Yeah.
And on the women's side for the Triple Crown, why didn't more you ladies show up?
Yep.
Whitney Post just kind of had a free ride. She just had to finish.
Show up and finish, and she did it. And congrats to her because
up and get paid.
Yeah, exactly. Consistency is the key to life, right?
Yeah.
No, the Triple Crown's a really unique element of the event, and I think it speaks well to the organizers to want to pull something like that off and draw that kind of attention. And good on them for putting a big cash purse out there, because there's something that's going to motivate racers to come and race. It's a good cash purse.
But next year you got to do four.
Oh, the quadruple. Mm-hmm. All right, looking forward to that.
The Belgian quad.
Those dates are already announced. We'll get to that here in a second.
Yeah, the other story is this Sandy Florin kid who put on such a crazy display at BWR California. And he's a kid, I think he's 19.
And a little older than that,
and he's a mountain biker, whatever. He's young, mountain biker. He's kind of new, so I didn't know who he was. A lot of us didn't know who he was. And he went and drilled off the front for about half of the race. And he had his number plate like upside down, wrapped around his stem so we couldn't read it. And it was driving us insane not knowing who this guy was, because out on course, you can't tell. There were people in the comments, you know, saying, why don't you guys know him? And so I was excited to see what he did here. But he had some sort of a problem.
I talked to him after the race, just said he wasn't feeling it. Just wasn't feeling good that day. He just didn't have to come into the fitness and felt a little sick and pulled out about halfway and rode on in. So another race down the road for another person that we'll be talking about
another
for the years
to
come, for sure.
Yeah, other guys, Griffin Easter, of course, and Paul Voss, super strong riders coming into gravel. And I think both of them have said they're going to do a gravel calendar next
year. Yeah, full gravel calendar for those guys.
So two new challengers that are going to be running around with the usual suspects.
Yep.
So we'll be getting to know them really well.
And luckily, what I would love to happen is this calendar normalizes a little. We won't have this compacted racing hard every single weekend. We'll have a little more stretching out to do. And some of these big races, we'll be able to draw even bigger fields, even stronger fields, especially with the women. We can kind of get that pull together a nice good cadence of the bigger events to be able to attract bigger fields of both the men's and women's racers.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen Colin Strickland here in Utah.
Yeah?
Yeah, see how he does. I mean, there's a lot of climbing here, but not as much as a race like San Diego.
No. He'd definitely be a threat on that course.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
Well, we can talk a little about the pre-ride show because we have so much fun doing that. And actually, it's a shame that we wear so many hats that we can't do more. Like, we wish that we could do more of those interviews and just pull even more athletes in to sit down with us. But it's actually probably one of the funnest things I do at any event that we do.
The technical term for our budget is shoestring.
And it shows. It clearly shows, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, as the sport grows, there would be more money to do more interviews. But, like at San Diego, I think we did 30 interviews because there was budget for the San Diego events. A bigger event, there's more money. The smaller events, we landed on, I think, 6 interviews in Utah,
Okay. Which
was pretty good.
And thanks to all the athletes for just sitting down with us and putting up with our goofiness. And it's great to just get their perspective and have a lot of fun with it because that whole concept even kind of started out on a whim. We just figured we'd go to Kansas and see if anybody would even talk to us. And lo and behold, they did.
We're at these events anyway. Let's talk to these people. Let's talk to the riders. Let's let the world know who they are, a little bit about their personality.
So go back and watch those. They're on the Pure Gravel YouTube channel. You can go back and watch the other events too because some of those are really compelling and a lot of fun. But, thanks to the athletes.
What was your favorite interview this time?
I always love talking to Pete because he's such a pro and he gives you such insightful stuff from that level. But I think hearing from Yuri was a lot of fun, even though we had a little minor meltdown mid interview, and that's the way it goes. But he's so full of energy and he's been doing this. He was right up on that cusp of when gravel was really getting big and won a couple of big events back then.
Yeah,
but
he's the OG.
Yeah. I think talking with him and hearing his excitement and enthusiasm, what he's doing now as an ambassador, both working in the industry and still out there racing really hard, I thought that was a lot of fun. So that'd be a good one for folks to go back and catch up on.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I wish we had the middle of the interview.
Oh, well. But we'll have to get him back at the next one.
Yeah. Okay, we should take a moment and thank our sponsor.
Yeah, absolutely.
We wouldn't be able to do the things we do without our sponsors. And this time, LEL Cycling stepped up to the plate and sponsored both the pre-ride show and our live coverage. And so LEL, in case you don't know, they're makers of the best cycling apparel on the planet. It's all I wear.
Yep.
It's all most of my friends wear around here in San Diego. They're our hometown brand.
Yep.
They make really great stuff. They design it all themselves, laser cut it, sweat the details, and just make the best equipment they can make.
Yep.
And it's great. And so they sponsored the show, and they gave us a code. If you go to lelcycling.com and use BWRCC, you can get 15% off. I think it goes till the end of October.
Okay. They just launched a brand new Sequoia collection, and portions of the proceeds of that will go to supporting the National Forest Foundation. So consider that in your purchases, because not only will you feel really good by wearing it, you will look really good and support a great cause in the process.
Did you know that the Sequoia collection is all about layers?
How about that?
Yeah.
Like, much like the rings on the tree. Is that it? Is that what it goes to?
Well, they've got new base layers. When I put on my arm warmers and I put on my vest and I go out on a cold morning, and I'm a big baby because I'm in San Diego and I'm not used to the cold.
Yeah.
There's this spot right here that's freezing icy cold in between where my arm warmers stop and my vest starts. So they have a new base layer it's a wool blend base layer, and it's got short sleeves on it, so it covers that area. And then they've got long sleeve jerseys, they've got thermal bibs, thermal tights, thermal jerseys. They got the whole thing from the warm weather gear to the cold weather, and you layer and combine it to get get it just right.
If anything, Ryan's an innovator and he's always looking for new materials and new ways to make the gear even better. So not surprised that they got something brand new coming out that's going to help keep those dainty parts of your shoulders nice and warm.
I need to get one of those.
I feel you.
It's good for a baby like me.
So what's coming up next? We're getting mid-September here, late September here. We're about to turn the calendar in October. What's next?
Kansas.
Kansas is coming.
Yeah.
We're going to the
other race in Kansas.
The other big race in Kansas. Our friends at Sunflower Bike and Outdoor and Bicycle are kind of headlining this race for us. We're going to do a big 3-day event out there. Friday is going to be a crit cross. We're going to do a benefit for the Steve Tilford Foundation, which is really, really important in cycling and certainly really big in that part of the country. Big expo all day on Saturday. And then the race on Sunday. Fun fact, the race is 111 miles long. Why? Because Steve that Tilford. Number 11 is very important to Steve Tilford. So it was important to us to honor that and be able to create a course that's going to be super challenging, take into consideration all the local elements, and it's going to be probably about 95% on Kansas gravel. So very little paved roads involved.
Yeah, and it's going to be markedly different than Unbound. And also, it's important for people to know this isn't like a carpetbagger thing. I don't even know if that works if you're going east. But it's been a while since history class. But this is co-organized with Dan Hughes and his Sunflower Bike Shop. They're local Kansans, dedicated members of the Kansas cycling community. Dan Hughes is a 4-times Unbound winner. And so they're helping to organize it in partnership with the Belgian Waffle Ride to bring something a little bit different. It's got a different flavor, a different ethos. There's twice the climbing per mile that Unbound has, although the race is almost half as long. It's got the same amount of climbing. It's to the north. The terrain is a little bit different, a little hillier, a lot of rivers going across.
I've heard it described as death by 1,000 paper cuts. There's no real long climbs. It's just coming at you all day long.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see that race unfold and see how the character of the race is so different than Unbound, even though it's only, you know, like 150 miles away.
Only, yeah. It's exciting. It's been an amazing year, and we've had such a great front row seat at some of the biggest events on the calendar. It's been a real pleasure, and I think now that we've got a couple days to rest after Cedar City, we can fully focus on getting Kansas ready to go, and we'll pack up this whole Pure Gravel shindig and take it on the road and have some fun out there.
Yeah.
It's been a blast, man. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for a fun weekend in Utah. I know we're coming back there again next year. The BWR calendar has already been announced for next year, so you can start making your plans. Registration dates will open the beginning of November, so you get your chance to lock in your spot on any of the four events that are currently planned, and maybe others in the works too. So lots of fun still to come.
And what's next for you? Are you announcing any more events?
I do have a couple coming up.
I don't know if you guys know this. You know, it's well known that Jim is the voice of the Belgian Waffle Ride, and he has been for many years. But he is also the voice of gravel.
Yeah, well, somebody around here tagged me with that, and we'll hold on to that, I guess, for as long as it sticks. But it's been a lot of fun. I don't even know how it happened, and just get lucky to get invited to these really cool events in different places. I've got a couple of events coming up next month. The Ride Santa Barbara 100, a nice Grand Fondo up in Santa Barbara, and then the Moab Stage Race, mountain bike race in Moab, that'll occur before we head to Kansas. And then after that, I'm lucky to get invited to work the Red Bull Rio Grande event that's coming up in November. Should be a lot of fun.
That would be a fun one.
Yeah. So grateful, with much gratitude, and much gratitude for you and the Pure Gravel crew that work so hard to make what we do and look really good, and the goofiness and the fun that we have is always a lot of fun.
All right.
All right, cool. We'll see you guys in Kansas. Keep your eyes out and have a look at all those great videos that we posted up. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for looking in.
I hope the camera kept rolling. It's possible the mic battery died, and it's possible we reached the 30-minute record limit. No, I'm
still in the back. I don't think we went that long, did we?
I don't think so.
It's probably only about 15, 18.
Still good. Where are we at? 25 minutes.
Okay.